more modest ones, we have bewilderingly little idea of what the cause was. Even after stripping out the more crackpot notions, there are still more theories for what caused the extinction events than there have been events. At least 24 potential culprits have been identified as causes or prime contributors: global warming, global cooling, changing sea levels, oxygen depletion of the seas, a condition known as anoxia, epidemics, giant leaks of methane gas from the seafloor, meteor and comet impacts, runaway hurricanes of a type known as hypercanes, huge volcanic upwellings, catastrophic solar flares. This last is a particularly intriguing possibility. Nobody knows how big solar flares can get, because we've only been watching them since the beginning of the space age, but the Sun is a mighty engine, and its storms are commensurately enormous. A typical solar flare, something we wouldn't even notice on Earth, will release the energy equivalent of 1 billion hydrogen bombs and fling into space 100 billion tons or so of murderous high-energy particles. The magnetosphere and atmosphere between them normally swat these back into space or steer them safely toward the poles, where they produce the Earth's comely auroras. But it is thought that an unusually big blast, say 100 times the typical flare, could overwhelm our ethereal defenses. The light show would be a glorious one, but it would almost certainly kill a very high proportion of all that basked in its glow. Moreover, and rather chillingly, according to Bruce Tsurutani of the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, it would leave no trace in history. What all this leaves us with, as one researcher has put it, is tons of conjecture and very little evidence. Cooling seems to be associated with at least 3 of the big extinction events, the Ordovician, Devonian, and Permian. But beyond that, little is agreed, including whether a particular episode happened swiftly or slowly. Scientists can't agree, for instance, whether the late Devonian extinction, the event that was followed by vertebrates moving onto the land, happened over millions of years or thousands of years, or in one lively day. One of the reasons it is so hard to produce convincing explanations for extinctions is that it is so very hard to exterminate life on a grand scale. As we have seen from the Manson impact, you can receive a ferocious blow and still stage a full, if presumably somewhat wobbly, recovery. So why, out of all the thousands of impacts Earth has endured, was the KT event so singularly devastating? Well, first, it was positively enormous. It struck with the force of 100 million megatons. Such an outburst is not easily imagined, but as James Lawrence Powell has pointed out, if you exploded one Hiroshima-sized bomb for every person alive on Earth today, you would still be about 1 billion bombs short of the size of the KT impact. But even that alone may not have been enough to wipe out 70% of Earth's life, dinosaurs included. The KT meteor had the additional advantage, if you're a mammal, that is, that it landed in a shallow sea just 10 meters deep, probably at just the right angle, at a time when oxygen levels were 10% higher than at present, and so the world was more combustible. Above all, the floor of the sea where it landed was made of rock rich in sulfur. The result was an impact that turned an area of sea floor the size of Belgium into aerosols of sulfuric acid. For months afterward, the Earth was subjected to rains acid enough to burn skin. In a sense, an even greater question than that of what wiped out 70% of the species that were existing at the time is how did the remaining 30% survive? Why was the event so irremediably devastating to every single dinosaur that existed, while other reptiles, like snakes and crocodiles, passed through unimpeded? So far as we can tell, no species of toad, newt, salamander, or other amphibian went extinct in North America. Why should these delicate creatures have emerged unscathed from such an unparalleled disaster, asks Tim Flannery in his fascinating Prehistory of America, Eternal Frontier. In the seas, it was much the same story. All the ammonites vanished, but their cousins, the nautiloids, who lived similar lifestyles, swam on. Among plankton, some species were practically wiped out, 92% of foraminiferans, for instance, while other organisms like diatoms, designed to a similar plan and living alongside, were comparatively unscathed. These are difficult inconsistencies. As Richard Forte observes, somehow it does not seem satisfying just to call them lucky ones and leave it at that. If, as seems entirely likely, the event was followed by months of dark and choking smoke, then many of the insect survivors become difficult to account for. Some insects, like beetles, Forte notes, could live on wood or other things lying around. But what about those like bees that navigate by sunlight and need pollen? Explaining their survival isn't so easy. Above all, there are the corals. Corals require algae to survive, and algae require sunlight, and both together require steady minimum temperatures. Much publicity has been given in the last few years to corals dying from changes in sea temperature of only a degree or so. If they're that vulnerable to small changes, how did they survive the long impact winter? There are also many hard-to-explain regional variations. Extinctions seem to have been far less severe in the southern hemisphere than the northern. New Zealand, in particular, appears to have come through largely unscathed, even though it had almost no burrowing creatures. Even its vegetation was overwhelmingly spared, and yet the scale of conflagration elsewhere suggests that devastation was global. In short, there is just a great deal we don't know. Some animals absolutely prospered, including, a little surprisingly, the turtles once again. As Flannery notes, the period immediately after the dinosaur extinction could well be known as the Age of Turtles. 16 species survived in North America, and 3 more came into existence soon after. Clearly, it helped to be at home in water. The KT impact wiped out almost 90% of land-based species, but only 10% of those living in fresh water. Water obviously offered protection against heat and flame, but also, presumably, provided more sustenance in the lean period that followed. All the land-based animals that survived had a habit of retreating to a safer environment during times of danger, into water or underground, either of which would have provided considerable shelter against the ravages without. Animals that scavenged for a living